for listening to Weekend Debrief, a podcast of Grace Church in Dallas, Oregon, where we look back at the events and activities of the weekend in our church community and the world and talk about them in light of the gospel. Thank you for listening. All right, we're here with another episode of Weekend Debrief. Pastor Dave here with Pastor Wes.
Yeah, how you doing, Dave?
Doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
You're surviving even after the devastating loss to the Cincinnati Bengals this last weekend.
Three times in 1 year is what it comes down to.
It's pretty brutal. And,
yeah, 3 points each game. At some point, maybe when they meet later on in the season.
There you go. One can only hope. I mean,
that's right.
That's pretty much what you got left.
Oh my goodness, hope. That's right. Well, we had a had a fun-filled, fun-packed Sunday message.
Oh yeah,
man, that was. Typically, you wouldn't think of all the topics that were covered on Sunday morning as all fitting together.
Yeah, World Cup.
Yeah.
Nakedness, drunkenness, communion, and Christmas.
And Christmas. Yeah.
But we hit it all.
What do they all have in common?
Well, you got to go listen to the message because I can't do that again.
They have December 4th message in common.
That's right.
No, it was good. And it all tied in together. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't listen to it, you haven't heard it, go back and listen to
it. That's right.
So, yeah, good message, good challenge, good. There's some encouragement in there for us as well. And, in our grace group, I was telling you earlier about it, on the Bible Project, they've got a great great five-minute video that talks about the curse and the blessing, and starting from Adam and Eve all the way through then how Jesus comes to reverse that curse. So really fit in well with a lot of the things that were discussed on Sunday. So, yeah, that'd be we'll put a link there for that that video in the show notes. But yeah, be a great great reminder to and kind of a little summary to watch that video.
Yeah, so, that's great.
Yeah. So speaking of, I don't know. That's not even a segue. The Chiefs.
You're referring back to the last topic.
The last topic
where I was teasing, but yes, the Chiefs lost to the Bengals.
The Chiefs lost to the Bengals.
So speaking of the Bengals, there's the
segue. We're eventually going to get there. Yeah. Speaking of the Bengals, we thought it would only be appropriate to cover their mascot for this week.
That's right.
The Cincinnati Bengal, whose name is. Houday, which is interesting. There's a little controversy on that name
with the Saints, right?
Yeah, Houdat, and so there is thinking that the controversy is that they stole that from the Saints. But as the chant went on, so they came up with the team slogan. They just decided they would name the Bengal that. The Houday name comes from the team's chant. Like I said, it goes back for decades. Fans yell, "Who they think gonna beat them Bengals? Nobody.
Yeah.
So, which, just when you read that, it sounds like it should. It's more of a New Orleans thing than a Cincinnati, Ohio thing. But
not having ever gone to Cincinnati that I can remember, it is fascinating.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people talk that way up there.
I don't know. Yeah. It just doesn't seem, no. So
it seems more southern than Midwest.
It does.
Northern Midwest.
Yeah. Yeah. I put in a link and
I was wondering about that. Yeah, it was a great article.
Oh my goodness.
It's a great article. I was like, okay, so we're tying it into the 49ers. This is great.
That was not intentional.
NFL 14 power rankings don't count out the 49ers who lost their second string starting quarterback. Mr. Irrelevant. New number one after Chiefs stumble. So for those of you who are not familiar with the idea of Mr. Irrelevant, which I wasn't until yesterday, actually. But Mr. Irrelevant is the name given to the last pick in the NFL draft. And so most of the time you don't even talk about Mr. Irrelevant, but now you're talking about Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, because he is now the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. Stepped in when Garoppolo had just a terrible injury, breaking his foot.
Yes.
Did you see the replay on that? It was just brutal.
Yeah.
You saw his ankle kind of fold on itself.
Yeah, doesn't look good.
Not cool. No. But Brock Purdy stepped in and threw a couple touchdowns, a couple hundred yards.
Yeah.
Threw an interception, but, I mean, for a first time playing in an NFL game as the 262nd pick in the draft or something like that. Pretty great. So there you go.
Yeah. Let me just do you a favor here, and I'll update that link.
No, I think the link is great. I really like the link as it is.
Yeah. No, this link is actually it is a look back to the 2022 Super Bowl, and it actually they take a look at the history of the Rams mascot, and then the Bengals. So they give you a little bit of history there.
History of the Bengals. There's the link you meant to.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that happen? So, not a bad looking mascot. Matter of fact, I'm a little partial to the Bengals. College that I got my bachelor's degree from, Idaho State Bengals.
There you go.
So, yeah.
All right.
Pretty good looking Bengal. So, yeah, we had in a football game, if you watch it on TV or if you've been to one, usually on third down, there's some sort of noise or a first down. Whenever we got a first down, which for that football team was very rare, but there was a large Bengal roar that came over the.
There you go.
Yeah, and it wasn't that ferocious sounding, but anyway, so there's a little unimportant history of, my college.
Year. Yeah.
So all right. There you go. So there you go.
I like he kind of looks like. What's the mascot for Frosted Flakes?
Oh, Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger. He kind of looks a little bit like Tony the Tiger.
He does look a little.
Uday Bengals, they're great. I mean, it could work. So there you go.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah, he's a jolly looking, big smile.
Yeah,
I like it. Uday.
Uday, Cincinnati Bengals. All right.
There we go. But we got some questions in.
Yeah, we do have some questions in. So we've got the first one. Let's just jump right in, take a look at it. So this first question is asking to reconcile Exodus 34:7 with Ezekiel 18:20. So really talking about in one passage describing that the Lord is compassionate. He's a gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in faithful love and truth. Maintaining faithful love to 1,000 generations, forgiving iniquity, rebellion, and sin. But he will not leave the guilty unpunished. And then 18:20, the person who sins is the one who will die. A son won't suffer punishment for the father's iniquity, and a father won't suffer punishment for the son's iniquity. There's more to those verses. How do we reconcile? And this is really just even a good Bible study topic and thinking about when you look at two passages and they seem to contradict each other. Mm-hmm. So what do we do with these two passages?
Yeah, well, we read the Exodus 34 on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Rita did, and the very final part of that, verse 7, bringing the consequences of the father's iniquity on the children and grandchildren of the third and fourth generation.
Yeah.
So then why would then in Ezekiel they say that the son won't pay for his father's sin. Mm-hmm. So I think we got to understand what it means that the consequences are visited upon the children and grandchildren. It really is getting at the idea of generational sin sin that is passed on by way of learned behavior or genetics or whatever. So, a son's going to, we talked about it at Sunday.
Yeah.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Yeah.
Like father, like son.
Yeah.
So there's learned behavior. There's also genetics where you can have a propensity towards addiction or anger or those kinds of things as both learned but also based on your genetic makeup and how you're wired and those kinds of things. So generally speaking, children will be raised to be a lot like their parents.
Yeah.
And so the consequences of a father then are visited on the son as they sin in the same way, visit upon their sons or daughters, as you know, and that kind of thing. And actually, there's an interesting excerpt from the Expositor's Bible Commentary on the Ezekiel passage, where it says, the exiles who received Ezekiel's message misunderstood the message of Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, which also reiterates that idea of, you know, the third and fourth generation. Let me look that up. So Exodus 20, verse 5. Wait for it. do not bow down and worship to them. Do not serve them. Talking about idols. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, bringing the consequences of the father's iniquity on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. And then it goes again, but showing faithful love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commands. I mean, we got to notice that contrast between the length and extent of faithful love to 1,000 generations versus iniquity and sin to the third and fourth generation. So it shows God's grace being greater than our sin and iniquity. But anyway, so that Deuteronomy 5, 9, Exodus 20, very similar. So the exiles in Ezekiel's message misunderstood the message of those passages, including Exodus 34. This principle of the Decalogue, which is the Ten Commandments, Deca, 10, 10 logos word, 10 words, which is the way they referred to the Ten Commandments, the 10 words. This principle of the Decalogue teaches that children would be affected by their father's sin. Parents model for their children the sinful behavior of parents as readily followed by their children. Regrettably, therefore, children frequently found themselves practicing the same sinful acts as their father. Likewise, they must accept the same just punishment for their actions. However, each child is still individually responsible. He can abort the sin, punishment, inheritance progression at any time, but he must repent and do what is right. So that's, I think, how we can reconcile the two is Exodus 34, Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5, they are speaking to that inherited sin that is repeated and learned. And then the Ezekiel 18 is pointing out you can break that cycle. And so it's not just that the son is being punished for what the father does. The son is being punished for what the son does that is learned by, you know, from the father.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. So at the end of, and maybe you have some insight on this. I didn't pick up on it until we were talking about this, but right at the end of verse 7 in 34:7, it says bringing the consequences of the father's iniquity. And then at the beginning of Ezekiel 18:20, a sin won't suffer punishment for the father's iniquity. So consequences and punishment, same word, carrying a little bit different weight. I mean, it first glance, first reading, there's a consequence because of the effect of sin. I can, you know, if someone in my family, my immediate family, if they sin, those consequences could affect me. Versus, I'm not guilty because of their sin, but I still deal with those consequences. Is that would that be reading too much into that, or?
That's a great question. Let me. Let's see. So the word, how does this work? I'm doing live research right now. So
I put you on the spot.
Yeah. So in Ezekiel 18, the word for father's iniquity. So the word for iniquity there is awan. And then in Exodus 34, this is interesting. Consequences is actually the same word.
Okay.
So it's being translated consequences. So really it's saying the sin of the fathers on the children. So they're taking that idea of consequences as an interpretation of the word sin.
Okay.
So the sins, the father's sins are on the children and grandchildren.
Okay.
So that could be pointing out that, which is interesting because you go a little bit earlier, maintaining faithful love to 1,000 generations, forgiving iniquity, same word, rebellion and sin. So he forgives iniquity, but he will not leave the guilty unpunished. Bringing the sins of the father on the children is really how that is being was written in the original language.
Okay.
They're interpreting consequences so that it's not just it makes more sense in the English than it does.
Sure.
It would have in the Hebrew there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So and then the word for punishment is different.
Is different.
It looks like from what I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a very quick
quick punishment. Yeah.
Yeah, so punishment there, it's the father won't, and a father won't suffer, a son won't suffer. The word there means to carry, lift up, bear. So the son won't bear for the father's iniquity.
Okay.
The father won't bear for the son's iniquity. So again, punishment is being added to explain what that Hebrew word is communicating. Okay. So a lot of times words are added in to bring, to flesh out the meaning, because if we just went with the Hebrew, the understood meaning is more than what the technical translation of the word is.
Right, okay.
So.
Okay. Well, that's good. Hey, thanks for letting me put you on the spot.
There you go.
And look at that. But yeah, definitely we see a picture of just that contrast of maintaining faithful love to 1,000 generations and then bringing consequences to the children, grandchildren, to the third and fourth generation. So another picture of God's grace, God's mercy, but yet a just and righteous God that is not going to let things go unpunished.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, good.
That was riveting on the spot Bible study, but that's how we do it. Like look at a word and you see what the word is saying, and in our English translations, sometimes that's adding context or clarity to a word that would on its own in English not make sense.
Yeah.
So that's typical in Bible study.
Yeah, that's good. Second question. If this was all new, so speaking of Noah, we were talking about, you know, he planted a vineyard and had some discussion on whether he was drunk on purpose or by accident, how that exactly happened. But the question is, if this was all new, would being drunk be a sin? And then the question asker says, the use of the word drunk implies a sin versus the wine made him sleepy, for instance. So, yeah, kind of interesting. So if it is new, does that mean that being drunk was a sin for Noah?
Yeah, well, and so we talked a little bit about that on Sunday, that whether or not it was new, Noah, it seems, was being held responsible. And we don't see that directly in the passage. It doesn't really condemn Noah or not. It definitely shows him being foolish.
Right.
And it shows just the recklessness that comes from being drunk. But it doesn't say, and God said to Noah or anything like that.
Right,
but
we
see where it's a, you know, there's links back to Adam's sin, eating the fruit, realizing he's naked, God has to cover him.
Yeah.
Noah drinking fermented fruit, exposing his own nakedness, his sons have to cover him. So there's Adam's sin escalates into Cain's sin, Noah's sin escalates into Ham's sin. So I think, yes, the conclusion we came to on Sunday was he is culpable for the sin of getting drunk, whether or not he knew what he was doing or it was an accident that, you know, maybe there wasn't wine before this. It seems that planting a vineyard, you know, viticulture, developing strains of grapes and turning that into wine and things was new. At least part of that was new.
Right. Yeah.
We even see archaeological evidence potentially for that. But the you know, was there alcohol before the flood? We're not told. Yeah. It seems like it would be likely. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the amount of evil was done and no one figured out how to ferment fruit. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly.
There are some who have tried to say that, saying that the conditions pre-flood were such that fruit couldn't ferment. Okay. I don't know. I don't know what to say to that. We don't know. Yeah. But we do know that the word for drunk... I looked that up ahead of time. It's sakar, and it means to become drunk, to drink one's fill, intoxicated, freely or festively drink alcohol, and so be under its influence to various degrees. It's also used like giddiness, incapacitation, lack of clear thinking, sickness, weakness, staggering. So it means to get drunk.
Yeah.
And then a very similar word, sekar, so... In English, it would be, or English letters, it would be with an E. Okay. So instead of S-A-K-R, it would be S-E-K-R, means fermented drink, beer, wine, anything made with fruit or grain, which is potentially intoxicating when drunk in excess. So okay. The words even, you know, fermented drink and then being drunk, there's just one letter difference.
Right.
And so very, very closely related words there.
Yeah.
So I think it's clear that it's meant to say he got drunk, not just sleepy.
Yeah. So to answer the question, if this was all new, which we're not for sure whether it was all new, would being drunk be a sin?
Yes.
It would seem to point to that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So very good. All right. Next kind of question, comment that came up, which great question. Do you have a simple chart of Noah's family with the family race or family lines? I know chapter 10 lists a genealogy, but I don't know what people, nations, are what these represent. And you kind of talked a little bit, kind of gave a brief, like here's some of the nations that or the ethnicities that line up with this genealogy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and I went and put on our website a PDF document that you can download. We'll put the link in the show notes here, but you can also find it under resources. And when we get to chapter 10 mm-hmm. of Genesis under, you know, the Genesis series, you can find the resource there. But it basically shows the family tree of Noah, and then it gives a map and it shows where those names settled after your passage, which is Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. So Babel, Babel. But that's my big question going
Babel
in.
And Babel.
I hope you settle that for me.
Okay, so. I'll work on that. And I can tell you the answer now, but that would totally...
that's right.
We wouldn't want to give away the answer before next week's podcast.
No. So, Babel or Babel, I want to know. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that.
The chart.
We have the chart online that really shows those things. So as the nations spread out, as those family lines spread out and settle, there's a map that shows where they settle using the names that are found in Genesis 10 in that table of nations passage. And so that's really helpful. But then you can also see those names put out on a family tree, which is quite impressive to see. So both of those come thanks to Logos Bible software, and one of them specifically was out of the ESV Study Bible that I have on there. Nice. And so, just to give credit where credit's due, but
which they are not sponsoring this podcast.
No. If they would like to, however,
Or Crossway,
we would definitely take that. But
All right. So good resources, and we'll kind of touch briefly on that on Sunday in Sunday's message.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Well, we got Pastor's Palette.
Yes.
It's that time, and it's December, so we went straight to the treats.
Straight to the treats. Yeah, I see that you added some stuff in there that nothing solid.
Nope.
Nothing. We just went,
Yeah, I can't remember if I've talked about this before. I feel like I did, but it's really what I've been eating, and so... I've got to say it again.
I don't remember you bringing this up. So I think
I must have told someone else then.
This is brand new.
There we go.
So dive in. Tell us what is it you've been eating.
So at Costco, this is really dangerous if you have a sweet tooth. At Costco, they have a limited edition Häagen-Dazs peppermint bark ice cream bar.
Mm.
And it's incredible. So we'll have a link. You can see the what it looks like in the show notes. Pull it up there, Wes. It's worth seeing. But it's a dark chocolate coating with candy cane pieces in the chocolate.
Yes.
And it covers a white chocolate ice cream. And it's an ice cream bar.
Yeah. And, ooh. Dave, that looks delicious.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
It is, dare I say, life-changing.
Wow.
Yeah. So white chocolate ice cream underneath, covered in candy cane pieces, coated in dark chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, that is some good-looking ice cream.
Yeah. Right? So if you are at all like peppermint and chocolate... If you like that idea of peppermint bark and that gets you, this ice cream bar is for you. And it's limited edition. The picture you have there in the link is on Häagen-Dazs's website. And it just has three bars in a box. I think at Costco it's like 15 bars.
Oh.
Because it's Costco.
Well,
so
right.
It's dangerous, okay. As I said.
You gotta listen to this description. I mean, I don't have the right reader's voice for this description, but... Our peppermint bark ice cream bars start with decadent white chocolate ice cream dipped in thick, dark chocolate, then speckled with cool peppermint candy. That's
it's great. And I mean, now look at the link, the URL there for the link. You know you've arrived as an ice cream company when your ice cream company, Häagen-Dazs, their website is icecream.com. That's legit right there.
Yeah.
I mean, drop the mic, walk away. No one else got icecream.com.
Their tagline is the home of ice cream.
Yep. So, I mean, Tillamook, Ben and Jerry, you got nothing on icecream.com.
Yeah.
The home of ice cream.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Okay. There you go. So that's what I got for you this week.
That's what you got.
And
okay.
You're welcome to all those who go out and buy them.
Yeah.
I'm both sorry and not sorry for... sorry. If you were on a diet, I'm sorry. If you, like me, throw diets out in December, then I'm not sorry.
Not sorry. There you go. Sorry, not sorry. So I went with Karma Coffee. Now, we had brought this up on a previous podcast.
Well, it was a love it and hate it. You were hating the fact that a lot of coffee shops aren't carrying eggnog.
Not carrying eggnog. And so Karma did have, for the month of November, had an eggnog drink, which was really good, called the Gobbler. And then their December drink with eggnog, and this did not disappoint, Christmas in a Cup. And
that pretty much says it all.
It does. It does. And
again, like icecream.com, Christmas in a cup. Yeah, it's a bold claim.
Where can you? Yeah, you can't go wrong.
No, but nailed it.
Gingerbread and caramel eggnog latte. If you're feeling just a little down, you need a little Christmas cheer. Go to Karma, get a Christmas in a cup. You take the first drink and all of a sudden... It feels like Christmas lights just came on in your mouth. I mean,
it's like the embodiment of the Christmas, like the you know, they say Christmas spirit on Hallmark movies.
Right.
You just need a little more Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Or like an elf to make Santa's sleigh fly.
Yeah.
You need a little Christmas spirit.
If
people were able to take a drink of Christmas in the cup, Santa's sleigh would fly fine.
I'm telling you.
I
totally agree with that.
Christmas spirit overload.
That's
after
right.
Taking a sip of that.
That's right. Christmas in a cup. Legal for anyone under the age of 21 to drink. So go get your Christmas in a cup.
We're not serious on that part.
Yeah.
I think they will still sell it to you.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not that kind of eggnog.
No. I did say legal.
Oh, legal.
It is legal.
I thought you said illegal.
No.
I'm like, whoa. So, yes, legal.
Legal for anyone
there we go.
Under the age of 21. So, yeah.
Misheard you there. So, that's great.
Well, never mind. We'll just keep
moving. No, go there. Go there.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we were talking about alcohol on Sunday. And
we were talking about alcohol.
Yeah, we were.
That's right. When in doubt, don't.
When in doubt,
get,
don't.
Get non-alcoholic eggnog.
That's right. But you can go to Karma and
Karma
you don't have to be in doubt.
You don't have any sort of moral, question
no
or conflict. No moral conflict
right.
there. You
That's
just
right.
enjoy it. The only potential more conflict is gluttony, but yes. We won't go there until January.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least limit it to one every other day.
There you go. Then, perfect.
You're right.
That's a good compromise. Right. I like it.
Okay.
Well, we have gotten to the end of this week, yep. And I think that we have nothing else to say.
Nope.
Looking forward to Sunday. Wes is preaching yeah. on Genesis 10 and 11, yep. really focusing in on the Tower of Babel, Babel.
The Tower in Babylon.
The Tower in Babylon. Actually, isn't it no. translated that way in one of the translations it where is. It just is the Tower of Babylon?
It is, yeah.
Which is, I think if you look at like Bible projects and stuff, they make those connections mm-hmm. of, you know, Babel becomes Babylon. Mm-hmm. So is that the answer? I mean, maybe Babylon, Babylon.
Babylon? Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Stay tuned for next week to find out.
We'll make it official next week. But yeah, the Tower of Babylon, the Table of Nations, yeah. the why we go from one family to
yep.
people all over the earth speaking different languages yeah. and have different customs and cultures. And it's a
fascinating
passage, yeah. a pivotal passage.
Yeah.
And really changes the trajectory of the rest of the Bible.
It does. One that we could spend more than 35 to 40 minutes on a Sunday morning. But
yeah.
Yeah. A lot of information there. So
yep.
Good stuff.
Well, thanks for joining us. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we will see you Sunday. Don't forget, we also have the kids and youth Christmas play,
yep.
Carol of the Bells, or Carol and the Bells?
Carol and the Bells.
Right. Yep. You won't want to miss it. Great time, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, live streaming 5 o'clock
yep.
here at the church. Don't miss it.
Be a great time.
All right.
See you Sunday.
See ya.